Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Censored. It's Lloyd Maeve here with two prefatory notes up top. So one is, as you'll probably hear, although maybe hopefully you won't hear it, there's a slight issue with the audio on my side of this episode. There's a kind of echo thing and a slight bit of sort of buzzy distortion that goes on. It fades as the episode progresses, but hopefully it won't prove too intrusive and might add to the sort of lo-fi charm of this episode about video. The second thing is that in the course of this episode, it turned out that we had sort of so much material that the we'd set the tape to kind of long play mode, and as such, we've had to make the novel decision for us to split it into two parts. So part one, which you're going to listen to today, is all about the sort of video nasties, moral panic, and the kind of legislative background to it and how video nasties get handled under British and Irish law. And then the second episode, which will be coming in future week, is going to be all about some specific examples of video nasties, looking at their covers and talking about gore and blood spatter and all the good things to which one goes to video nasties for. So enjoy that, and apologies for this brief intrusion. Welcome to Censored. I'm Dr. Lloyd Maeve Houston.
And I'm Dr. Aoife Vrhtnach.
And today we are doing one of our asymmetrical explainer episodes where one of us has gone away and, you know, just really opened up the full throttle on our hyperfocus and is going to, well, I guess in the spirit of this episode, disgorge and guide that information all over the other person. And in this instance, I am the one who's going to be doing that. And we're going to be doing that on the topic of video nasties. So I guess in the spirit of a magician sort of showing you that there's nothing up either sleeve, Aoife, what do you know of video nasties?
Nothing. I would safely say that they are not a type of film that ever attracted me. But also, as a child growing up in the midst of this, we had no video player. So, like, we were absolutely deprived of any opportunity to be corrupted by this evil medium, a fact that my mother was extremely smug about and we were very, very cross about. There was nothing we could do about it. And then when I got my own video player, I learned that I really have no taste for fictional violence and representations of same on screen. They make me sick. So I know nothing.
Cool. Yeah, well, I was going to, that was kind of something I was going to ask about, was like, you know, when did the capacity to play recorded film come into your life?
Oh, it would have been 18-ish. Yeah. So my whole childhood, we had no video. We couldn't record from the telly. Yeah, it was like we could read whatever we wanted. My mother didn't give a shit about what we read. And that meant all of her bookshelf, which included well, obviously D.H. Lawrence and people like that. But, you know, she didn't think there were dirty books, but she was convinced that television would rot your brain. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, definitely a conversation we can circle back to around the implied value and perceived influence of different media. And, you know, we can get maybe a bit Marshall McLuhan-ish about, you know, affordances and things. But yeah, I mean, I guess in ways you've, you know, sort of made clear there, right? The video nasty as category, as bugbear, as moral panic is very much a testament to the rather unexpected ways in which the commercial availability of video completely shifts the landscape and seems to catch basically everyone involved on the hop. Initially, the film industry is really wary of video because they kind of think, okay, the bottom is going to fall out of cinema screening if we back this too hard. So initially, where film studios and producers do release things on video at all, it's done in an extremely expensive way that's intended for video rental places, which are seen as a sort of, you know, bottleneck on this. And it isn't until a bit later that you get quote-unquote affordable video. But what this leaves is a window where every buccaneer and opportunist on the market can seize a space to be filled here. And what they particularly exploit is the fact that as a new medium, video eludes or evades a lot of existing licensing and regulation around the distribution of film. So what you have are a bunch of like video companies who come into being and take unlicensed films from a lot of different international markets and get them onto video and flood the sort of emerging video retail market with, you know, usually these very extreme, deliberately pulpy things. So that, you know, there's, in terms of the sort of genealogy of this as a moral panic, it's a bit like what happens with comic books in the 50s. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So there's, you know, Frederick Wortham's famous Seduction of the Innocents, which is this, you know, psychiatric sort of study of the effects of comics on the young mind and the way that they feed into juvenile delinquency, which becomes the basis for a series of congressional hearings that produces the Comics Code Authority of America. There's actually one of the early articles that kind of sets the video nasties trend in motion is just called The Seduction of the Innocents. So it's like it's almost like a citational sort of moral panic. But the term video nasty doesn't originate with Mary Whitehouse, but is popularized by her.
Mary Whitehouse is just everywhere. She's got to be one of the most important figures for about 20 years in terms of censorship.
Yeah, I mean, her inexhaustible capacity to be outraged by things that she usually hasn't seen is a beautiful staple of British culture from, yeah, the kind of 60s when she finds her kind of vigilance organization through to, yeah, you know, well into the kind of 80s and 90s. Her route into this is really funny. Basically, in order to generate controversy for one of the films they're putting out, Cannibal Holocaust, you'll find that cannibalism and the Holocaust crop up with a kind of alarming frequency in the video nasties. Basically, the distributors of that sent her a copy or sent a kind of complaint about it to her, I think, along with a copy. They were kind of pretending to be an outraged, you know, concerned citizen and drew it to her attention. But, you know, she predictably kicks into full gear. And in tandem with that, you also have, responding to this kind of unregulated state of affairs, the Director of Public Prosecutions in the UK, because there is no legal code particularly pertaining specifically to video, starts trying to catch people using the Obscene Publications Act of 1959.
Really?
Yeah, so
like a new medium, but the old legislation.
Well, precisely because that old legislation has like a particular set of sort of purchases it can get on the problem in a way that, so the Obscene Publications Act, to cut a very long story short, singles out any material likely to kind of corrupt or deprave those into whose hands it may fall. And what it targets is not the author or the text in a virtual sense. It targets specific, concrete, tangible manifestations of the text. You know, it's printed matter that it goes after. And so it targets publishers and like booksellers particularly. So if it's on your shelves in a store commercially, that's where the problem comes in. That's where the seizure occurs. So I think the logic runs, it's like, okay, right, well, you know, we can't catch this upstream, but we'll just go to places that have videos on their shelves and we'll just seize their whole stock. And because you can't trust what's on a tape, like you can't trust what's, you know, the wrapper on the tape, you have to watch the whole tape. So it's a sort of weird period where, like, basically because I think it's, you know, it's a fun time for them, you have whole sort of police forces devoting like insane numbers of man hours and officers to just watching tapes, you know.
They're technically at work and clocked on, but they're all sitting around watching videos.
Yeah, and there are a lot of funny instances of people watching videos in this story. So when this eventually makes its way to the Houses of Parliament, there's early in the debate over what becomes the Video Recordings Act of 1984, a supercut of all the worst bits of all the worst video nasties is shown to MPs on the floor of the House. But basically you have all these seizures and prosecutions being brought, and that is where the story gets a bit sadder. Like, you know, people's livelihoods are being ruined here, people are being quite severely criminally prosecuted, and, you know, some of the last, I think the last prosecution under the Obscene Publications Act that, you know, stands to date is under this sort of mode. But essentially local authorities start saying, what are we looking for here? Can you provide us with a formula for what sorts of things we should be targeting? And what emerges is a succession of memos that, when taken together, constitutes a list of 72 films, some of which the DPP believe would be definitely prosecutable under the Act, some of which are fringe cases. And I think of those, 39 are systematically targeted and actually were found and destroyed. But as every cinephile in the 80s and 90s will tell you, what it produced was just this really handy sort of like buyer's guide of you know, the worst films, or the, you know, the real gruesome grisly shit. I'll not read all 72, but I'll take you through some of these and you can get a sense of what we're dealing with here. Things like Axe / California or Axe Massacre, The Beast in Heat, you know, ooh, Bloodbath, fine, yes. A succession of cannibal films. Cannibal Apocalypse, Cannibal Ferox, Cannibal Holocaust, Cannibal Man, Cannibal Terror. We also have Don't Go in the House, Don't Go in the Woods Alone, Don't Go Near the Park, Don't Look in the Basement.
They sound like public safety films.
I was going to say, yeah, they sound like those weird, spooky, bad public safety films from the 70s that do themselves feel like weird artifacts of cult horror. There's a crucial film in this, or one that gets used a lot in the kind of campaign to suppress these, is The Driller Killer, which is Abel Ferrara's first film, in which a guy kills a lot of people with a drill.
With a drill,
And it was sort of the video box art for that, which features stills from the film, but with a big drill bit protruding from them. Because, I mean, basically these things operate, like, if you think about how these things are being marketed, it's very much the same principle that undergirded pulp publishing in the 40s and 50s, right? It's like lurid cover to hook you in, right? You know, the box is how you sell this. So you go hard. And some of these boxes do go hard. The Evil Dead, which we'll hear about in a bit. And then one of the more troubling things is there a substrate of these films riff on Nazism, and particularly the debaucheries, as they frame it, of camps. So you've got things like the Gestapo's Last Orgy.
Oh my God.
Or SS Jesus. Experiment Camp. And
oh no.
Yeah, those are about as sensitively handled as you might expect. I Spit on Your Grave, another infamous one.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah.
Yes, I've come across that.
And Snuff, another important one, which basically creates the idea of the snuff film as a source of moral panic. So yeah, as a brief aside, Snuff is a film that is at least aspiring to be a kind of deconstruction of like the ethical stakes of documenting certain kinds of, you know, violence that
so it follows a film crew, one of whom then becomes the kind of subject of a snuff movie within the snuff movie, which people then misconstrued as being real. So the idea that, like, actual filmed murder was circulating on video is a kind of epiphenomenon of a video nasty. And it's, you know, it's this weird simulacrum for which there doesn't seem, like, you know, obviously now with certain corners of the internet, these things do, you know, find a kind of wider circulation. But yeah, so the idea of the snuff movie gets kind of produced by this. There's actually a very good documentary on this from 2010 that can be relatively easily found online, not to encourage piracy, which is a big issue of the video nasties thing as well. But it's called Video Nasties, Moral Panic, Censorship and Videotape. We're, you know, riffing on Sex, Lies and Videotape, directed by Jake West. But one of the things that everyone contributing to that talks about is how, with the video nasties, someone might have bought the original tape, but then usually what will have happened is someone will have cloned the tape by, like, recording, you know, from one VCR to another. And then each time you re-record or rip the tape like that, you degrade the image quality a little bit further. And then when you combine into that the fact that people will be constantly rewinding back to particular moments, you then further degrade the quality. So, but what that does is cover up quite how creaky some of the special effects and sort of, you know, it really hides a multitude of sins, or gives everything a sort of, you know, that slightly sort of flat visual quality that video had, in a way that probably amplifies the verisimilitude of some of this. So, you know, in some ways, obviously, it's lovely that we get these beautiful 4K restorations of some of these classic horrors, but in some ways, it also feels like, no, low resolution is the way to view this.
Yeah, like, yeah, I mean, nobody saw it like this. It was all a bit fuzzy and a bit squeaky.
Yeah.
And, like, it's interesting that it must have become a kind of a visual experience and an aural experience all of its own, unique to the video nasty, you know, compared to going to a standard film in the cinema or watching television. Like, it's a whole different experience.
Completely. So essentially what you have is a growing vigilance campaign saying that these videos are being marketed on the basis of their lurid content. They have a capacity to kind of corrupt and deprave. We have no way of regulating into whose hands they may fall. You've got places being sort of raided and their whole stock taken. And obviously the media love this. You know, it becomes this perfect storm. The Daily Mail take this all up. Mary Whitehouse's sort of contingent commission quite dubious research into how widespread the sort of circulation of these videos is and what the effects of it on children are. So there's a point whenever this report, which is done at what is now Oxford Brookes, but under quite shaky circumstances, it's all been sort of disproved as a study, but it alleges that over 40% of children under the age of 6 had seen a video nasty.
Under the age of 6?
Yeah. Now, how that figure was arrived was that, like, they...
How many video players are there? There's not that many.
Well, exactly. There was a sort of counter study done, which very rightly asked the question of, like, well, you know, children lie, and they usually lie specifically about, like, the cool scary things they've done. So they gave them a list of some real video nasty titles and some they just made up, and something like
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
50% of the children claimed that they had seen films that don't exist. So
yeah, I mean, that tracks, really.
Yeah, so, you know, if you ask 8-year-old Timmy, have you seen Cannibal Holocaust in front of his friends, he's going to be like, yeah, I did, and it didn't even scare me. Like, so what? Yeah.
Yeah, it was so cool, like.
I'd eat you. So, yeah, a lot of creaky research, but very quotable statistics emerging about how apparently widespread all of this gets. Also, a lot of kind of stories about, like, oh, children's parties have become, you know, just viewing parties for video nasties. And, like, there's a I can't remember who makes it, but someone claims that, like, oh, you know, the Conjurer has been replaced by the video nasty.
I mean, like, also, the children's party with your friends is such a middle-class concept, with a Conjurer and entertainment.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily how everybody marked birthdays either.
Well, no, 100%. And that is the other, you know, in classic fashion, that class is a big dimension of this, insofar as anytime anyone is getting on their soapbox to defend the right of these films to exist, not many people are being like, you know what, Cannibal Holocaust, a peerless work of cinema. But they are saying, like, within the exploitation genre within which it operates, it's doing interesting things. And, you know, fundamentally, people should at least have the option to view it. But anytime someone makes that sort of claim, it's like, well, it's all right for you to say that. You're an intellectual, but what of those who are not media literate, et cetera, et cetera? And so the sense of the innocent viewer in terms of the child and the moral panic figure of the child, but also the sense of the lumpen proletariat and their viewing habits and how this is now coming straight into their home, you know, is all a big part of this. And so this all culminates in the passage of the Video Recordings Act in 1984, which is one of the most wide-ranging and thoroughgoing pieces of censorship legislation that actually is on the books, really, in Europe. But really, funnily, had to be reintroduced in 2010, because in 2009 they realized that they'd never sent it to the European Commission, so it actually had never had legal breaches. So they frantically got it back through Parliament in like a single day to sort of be like, no, still holds.
We just forgot to complete the paperwork on this occasion.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be like a Tory government to forget to run something by the EU, to be fair.
Never. Did that act have the word censorship actually in it, or obscenity, or any of the triggers that we are used to seeing?
Well, one of the sort of ironies of this is that it's actually the act that changes the name of the BBFC. So the Video Recordings Act empowers the BBFC to serve as a kind of classification and regulatory body for video, as it had been doing for commercially screened film. But it also, because it introduces this kind of classification dimension, right, they're the ones who put the age ratings on the videos, they cease to be the British Board of Film Censors and become the British Board of Film Classification. So there's a certain irony that, like, at the point where they're becoming even more censorious than they had been for a long time, they're also now, you know, kind of the most innocuously named that they've ever been.
Never trust bureaucracy when it rolls back from the clear word into something like administration, classification, examination. It's always a cover for something that they just don't want to say. But yes, it is true. They are just examining, but examining with intent, you know?
So the Video Recording Act establishes a set of sort of parameters for this that doesn't, that skirts around using the language of, like, you know, corrupt and depraved, etc., but just sort of develops a kind of meta language for it. So there are some types of film and video that are just exempt from classification, right? You know, things that are designed to inform, educate, or instruct, or are concerned with sport, religion, or music, they're exempt. However, they come under that sort of rubric and can be subject to restriction if they contain to a significant extent any of the following: human sexual activity or acts of force or restraint associated with such activity, mutilation or torture of or other gross acts of violence toward humans or animals, human genital organs or human urinary or excretory functions, techniques likely to be useful in the commission of offences or are likely to any significant extent to stimulate or encourage such sexual activities, or are likely to any extent to encourage mutilation, torture, or gross violence, or are likely to any significant extent to stimulate or encourage the commission of offences. So it's the old kind of, you know, imitable violence and sex and bodily functions stuff, basically.
Yoking them together very explicitly. So not just that the sex and the bodily functions are themselves obscene, but they will create something violent if you watch this.
Yes, and there is this kind of fear that these video nasties are causing a crime wave. So all this emerges out of that, like, completely, you know, brain-broken sort of Thatcherite thing of, like, on the one hand, you know, there is no society anymore, the state needs to get out of everyone's way, we're all neoliberal now. But on the other hand, we're immensely socially conservative and extremely tough on law and order. One person in that documentary I mentioned, like, talks about reading a story in a paper where there have been a series of animal mutilations occurring somewhere, and the police, when interviewed, were like, we either attribute this to video nasties or the new moon.
Okay, I was convinced you were going to say black magic and Satanism, because that was the next one.
Well, I think that's what the new moon is, yeah, I guess, maybe.
Code for Satanism.
But yeah, to round off the story in terms of bringing in its Irish dimension, Ireland has a version of this, but it's a slightly weirdly staggered one, but one that then gets really tough toward the end. So in January 1980, there's a newspaper story that sort of runs with how, oh, censor wrong-footed by video, and notes how you can buy videos of uncut versions of films that had either been banned outright or heavily cut by the censor. So the examples it gives include Carnal Knowledge from 1972, The Stud from 1978, and its sequel The Bitch from 1980. Which I think is a Joan Collins movie.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, is that the based on the Joan Collins novel that was also banned?
Yeah, so it's, yeah, that's but yeah, wow. So you can get those on video. And a company called Video Entertainments begin importing and distributing stuff in Ireland, basically after ringing around different relevant bodies to just check that there's no particular legal purchase on this. So they contact the censor's office, they contact the Garda, they contact revenue commissioners. All of them are sort of like, yeah, I mean, censor doesn't actually seem to have any legal mandate to deal with this. Individual revenue officers are responsible for determining whether a shipment should be withheld or not. So, yeah, seems like this can go ahead. In mid-1981, the Irish Times ran a series on how video was kind of circumventing censorship. So the first story was called Show Your Own Blue Movies. And, you know, and listed the things that, like, you know, like the person who wrote it managed to get their hands on a copy of Deep Throat and stuff.
Oh, nice. And then, so that sounds a bit like our, you know, garage porn type.
Well, exactly.
Thing.
And it gets better, because the second story is Public House Picture Shows. And it's just about how, like, pubs are just, you know, screening, like, pirate copies, uncut copies of films, like, weeks before they're due to go into the cinema. So, you know, apparently, like, 10 pubs in Tralee are in on this, and, you know, screening stuff,
no,
like, weeks
way.
Before it reaches the cinema and before it's been censored.
But there were no tellies in pubs until the 90s.
Well.
Or were there?
Apparently, you know, high-end Tralee establishments were leading the curve on this. Also, I should add, obviously, as always, we are indebted to Kevin Rockett's big book for this information, but... But yeah, apparently piracy is basically the main issue initially. It's the film industry itself that are like, we're hemorrhaging money through this, or there is so much, you know, kind of potential legitimate income that is being missed because of this. The moral panic doesn't really get underway till like the mid-80s, which is a bit different. You know, it's already played out in Britain, right? You've already had the VRA by 1984, but Rocket suggests that it's basically probably because there's slow uptake for video equipment because Ireland is in a recession for most of the early 80s. So,
yeah,
you know, video does okay. Like in August 1980, there are 20,000 VCRs imported and they're selling for about 550 quid. But, you know, demand is outstripping supply at that point. But by 1986, there's only 200,000 units in the country and about 500 places selling video, where the industry had sort of expected that to be about three times as many. So the number of homes with VCRs remains limited. But by 1986, we do have the Select Committee on Crime, Lawlessness and Vandalism getting involved.
Ooh, vandalism. Yeah. So breaking up like the public bins and putting them on fire is connected to watching video nasties.
Well, basically everything in this period somehow becomes connected to video nasties. It's a committee on which there are a few familiar names. So Bertie Hearn's in there. Yeah, let's see. We've got Bertie Hearn, Vincent Brady, Liam Cosgrave, you know, figure of great probity. Brian Cowan, Joe Doyle, Mary Flaherty, Alice Glenn, Mary Harney. So there are some women, but it's, you know, skews male quite heavily. But it's chaired by Michael Woods. So they produce a report on video nasties and use the term explicitly, which is quite fun. So it's in the parliamentary
record. Oh, do they?
Yeah. It is report number 10, Controls on Video Nasties. At its meeting on 19th of February 1986, the committee expressed concern at what it considers to be a tendency toward a higher tolerance for violence in our society. The presence of violence and sexual abuse on videos, films and television was considered to contribute to a lowering of standards in society generally and to the unconscious conditioning of people to accept such standards.
Ooh, that's very, very insightful. Unconscious conditioning, I see.
Yeah, being brainwashed into being...
Yeah.
Violent rogues. The people they hear from are sort of fairly telling in terms of like the comes being determined in advance, shall we say. So they had a meeting with the Irish Videogram Association, which I guess makes sense. They meet with the film censor, obviously, representatives from RTE, but they also hear from CASE, which is the Campaign Against Sexual Exploitation, who pursue a very Andrea Dworkin-ish, all pornography is priming people to commit sexual violence. They're sex negative feminists in that sort of formulation.
Oh, so in that sense, the American sort of feminist porn wars are playing out in Ireland as well.
Yes, yeah, kind of a sort of localized version of that is occurring here, and they're being heard from. And, you know, they make the case that these films, which, you know, to be fair, treat women heinously. let's be real.
Yeah.
We'll talk more maybe about that. But yeah, that, you know, that there is a lot for feminists and people of any stripe to be troubled by in terms of how women and their bodies and how, you know, particularly sort of sexual assault is leveraged in these films. They also hear from Dr. J. Robbins, who's from the Department of Health, and Dr. Marie Woods from the Sexual Assault Unit at the Rotunda Hospital. So the conclusion that is reached is very much that video is rendering available to, you know, susceptible, young, impressionable Irish mind an emulatable model of sexual violence and lawlessness. And a very conservative framing is adopted, but one that is given a kind of liberal sheen through the involvement of CASE and so on as well. So it's like, no, you know, this is not paternalistic censoriousness. We're acting in the interests of Ireland's women in opposing this filth. And so that report forms the basis for, initially there's a private member's bill, but then the Department of Justice kind of are bringing their own bill. And basically, to cut a long story short, it winds up being very similar to its British equivalent, but it arguably goes further in the categories it establishes and receives very little opposition. Like, nobody is kind of coming out in defense of video or the kinds of films that are perceived to be among the video nasties.
It's very hard to defend in the sense of, you know, that this is art. It's like, well, I mean, yeah. it's titillation, entertainment, and definitely commercial. Like, you know, like, it's hard to defend it on the basis of free expression for artists, which would be the normal way of opposing censorship.
Yeah, no, you have to get quite far into the meta pleasures of trash and schlock to really kind of make a case for this. But what it means is that this it doesn't really get kind of finalized and passed until like and come into effect until 1991. So Ireland has this
really
long period where video is essentially unregulated.
Gosh.
in a way that is, yeah. So on the one hand, yes, we do get this belated and kind of almost citational, like fashioned in the kind of mold of its British equivalent, Moral Panic, around video. But there's also not a lot of urgency about addressing this, really.
Yeah, it's terrible. God, we really should fix this. I mean, maybe next year we could get round to it.
So, yeah, it's an interesting one. And again, you know, to put the call out to our listeners, like, if you have any memories of, you know, being able to access unexpectedly something on video that, you know, you might not have been able to sort of see elsewhere, like, please let us know. What, you know, what was there a kind of sweet spot window? Also, let us know if you watch something in a pub. That would be...
Yeah. And how big the telly was, because it must have been small. Like, the big screens don't come in until Italia 90, really, because of the football.
Oh, sorry. You know, just on that, as an aside, you want to know what the best-selling video in Ireland was in, I think, 1980?
What?
It was the Pope's visit, as distributed by RTE. It was the 1979 papal visit. So
that was being shown in a lot of church halls, I suspect.
Yeah, I'm sure that was wheeled into a lot of classrooms.
I can see why it would be popular, though, because so many people were there that they might have been hoping to spot themselves in the audience.
No, completely. And yeah, this does facilitate that sort of odd sense of, you know, own the moment that you were peripherally part of. But yeah, so it plays out basically as you'd expect in that regard. But, you know, there are specific moments that arise out of this that we can maybe revisit in future. But yeah, you know, the things that get targeted early on are the ones you'd expect. So I think the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is like the second film. You know, it's like they sort of index it like, you know, the year and then the number. So it's like 1991-1, you know, 1991-2. And I think 1991-2 is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But yeah, I mean, I'm conscious that I've already basically spoken for the full length of an episode. But if you want
without actually giving me a huge detail on any of the films that are the video nasties.
Well, okay.
Apart from their titles.
We can, you know, like a mangled videotape, you know, chewed up and spat out of sequence. Yeah, I guess we'll see how we fix this in the edit.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.